VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Anna Mateo, Susan Shand, Dan Friedel, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Anna Mateo.
The COVID-19 pandemic has been difficult on many groups of people, but perhaps it has been especially hard for many older people. Many months of being alone or isolated has taken its toll on many senior citizens. However, in some places, that isolation is coming to an end. For example, in a senior center in New York City, seniors shake their hips and stomp their feet to salsa, cha-cha, and merengue music. After 2 years of living in COVID-19 pandemic isolation, Latin dance classes are getting them moving together again. Despite illness and mobility issues, including the loss of a leg, students are now able to take free classes at the YM and YWHA of Washington Heights and Inwood in Upper Manhattan. The dance instructor is 50-year-old Walter Perez. He and his partner, an Argentinian tango dancer, started the hour-long class in 2013. Their goal was to teach Latin social dances at senior centers. Perez said, "We saw how our students got happier and improved their physical balance, and they socialized." Perez told reporters from Reuters News Agency that the classes start with seated exercises. This way, everyone, even those who have trouble moving, can be included. And then, he added, we stand up and we dance a little bit. One of the students is Felix Castillo. Last year, his leg was amputated due to complications from diabetes. The 74-year-old trumpet player said, I get emotional and need to dance when I hear salsa. He said he feels the music and dances in his chair. Despite dementia, Eugenia Peralta cannot help but dance around the room. The 89-year-old is known for her energetic moves on the dance floor. For this, her fellow dancers call her Roadrunner, said her daughter, Jackie Peralta. A roadrunner is known to be a fast-moving animal. COVID took a toll on her. Her mobility went down, said Jackie. But now her mother is active. In fact, Jackie said her mother has a hard time staying still in one place. Walter Perez, the instructor, said that when in-person classes started, after nearly a year's break, the stamina of the senior students was not the same. He said many were missing, so it was very sad. But we were happy to be here and to come back, to have this courage to keep going. What drives Perez is the pleasure of dance. He found this relationship with dance at age 21. That was when his mother died. I went to the church to pray. Next to the church in Argentina, there was a tango place. So I started dancing tango, and it was therapeutic for me, and then became my profession and my way of living. He added that the music and dance have a healing, therapeutic effect on people. He likens it to an embrace. When the music is playing and you are dancing with others, you are not alone. You are walking with the music in an embrace. I'm Ana Mateo.
With few trees left to slow the wind in southern Madagascar, sand blows continuously. It settles across fields, villages, roads, and in the eyes of hungry children waiting for food aid. 4 years of extremely dry weather and forest clearing to make farmland have turned the once fertile area into a dusty red emptiness. There's nothing to harvest. That's why we have nothing to eat, and we're starving, said Tarira. The mother of seven waited at the World Food Program, WFP, center near Anjeki Binatara. She was there to get plumbi, a dense peanut-based food provided to starving children. The UN agency said more than 1 million people in southern Madagascar currently need help from the WFP. Holding her 4-year-old son, Avoraza, by his thin arm, she said, "There are seven, so there wasn't enough food. The plumbi wasn't enough for him." Like many others in the area, Tarira and her family have sometimes eaten a local plant called rakita. The plant grows in the wild, but provides few valuable nutrients, she said, adding that eating it can cause stomach pain. Madagascar is the fourth largest island on Earth, and it contains one of the planet's most diverse ecosystems. It has thousands of species of colorful plants and wild animals. But it is not all a natural green paradise, especially in the south. The environmental reality on the island has changed. We used to call Madagascar the Green Island, but sadly now it is more of a red island, said Soha Lahimaro Tsimendelatsi, governor of the southern Androy area. The food crisis in southern Madagascar grew over several years. Officials and aid organizations point to a mix of causes: drought, deforestation, other environmental damage, as well as poverty, COVID-19, and population growth. Madagascar is home to 30 million people. It has always been a place of extreme weather, but scientists say climate change and its fast increasing temperatures are worsening the situation quickly. At the height of the food crisis in the south, the WFP warned the island was at risk of seeing the world's first climate change famine. Theodore Mbenesum runs WFP operations in southern Madagascar. He said there are no usual weather patterns any longer. villagers can no longer predict the best time to plant or harvest. He said the WFP, other aid organizations, and local government have worked to limit the food crisis. He said severe malnutrition among children had dropped from about 30% a few months ago to about 5% now. When you look in the villages, you see children running left and right. That wasn't the case before, he said. Local communities are now working on forward-looking projects, like an effort to protect hills of sand along the coastal town of Pho Cap. But in rural areas where people live in poverty, the crisis grows. Felix Fitiavantsoa was burning down a wooded area to start farming. He and his new wife had to eat. His main worry was whether it would finally rain so he could get started. If there's no rain, I don't know what we'll do. We'll pray to God, he said. I'm Susan Shand.
Scientists at the University of Michigan say you are right if you think allergy season is getting worse and lasting longer. Climate change makes trees and plants produce more pollen and start earlier. The bad news is that it will continue to get worse. The Michigan researchers say allergy season in the United States used to start around the middle of March. Now, however, especially in the warmer southeastern part of the country, it starts about 1 month earlier. If climate change continues at its current pace, it might start around January 1st by the year 2100. If, however, reductions in greenhouse gas are put in place, the sneezing would start closer to the end of January. Around the world, about 30% of people suffer from pollen allergies. Among children in the U.S., that number is about 40%. Yingxiao Zhang is lead author of the study, recently published in the journal Nature Communications. He said sneezing and runny noses associated with allergies cause people to miss work and spend more money on health care. The lost days of work hurt global economies. There are also about 25 million Americans with the condition known as asthma, which can make breathing difficult. Allergy season is extra hard for them. A longer allergy season in the future could cause problems, said Amir Sapkota, a professor from the University of Maryland. He was not involved in the Michigan study. Those in the southeastern U.S. will have more problems due to the warming climate, said Allison Steiner, who worked on the study. In addition, those in the northwestern U.S. will see alder tree pollen start much sooner. People in Texas, sensitive to cypress tree pollen, will notice a change. Other people who react to pollen from certain grasses and ragweed will also notice a difference in coming years, Zhang said. Bill Onderegg is a biologist and climate scientist at the University of Utah. he was not involved in the study. He said, "The new study notes that the next pollen increase will be twice as large as the increase since 1990. He called the Michigan study important. He also said, "The pollen increase will have serious health consequences." I'm Dan Friedel.
The American Space Agency, NASA, has extended flight operations on Mars for its Ingenuity helicopter. Ingenuity landed on Mars a little over a year ago, along with NASA's Perseverance Explorer, or rover. At first, NASA officials described Ingenuity as a demonstration mission. It was designed to see whether the small aircraft could take off, fly a short distance, and then land on the red planet. The helicopter quickly succeeded in those areas during a series of tests. NASA said the flights marked the first time any aircraft had performed a powered, controlled flight on another planet. Last May, NASA announced it was expanding Ingenuity's experimental mission. Since then, Ingenuity has kept flying on Mars. So far, the helicopter has completed 21 flights. On March 15th, the space agency announced it was extending Ingenuity's mission through September. Thomas Serbukhan is Associate Administrator of NASA's Science Mission Directorate. He praised Ingenuity's progress. "Less than a year ago, we didn't even know if powered, controlled flight of an aircraft at Mars was possible," he said. "Now we are looking forward to Ingenuity's involvement in Perseverance's second science campaign." During that next science campaign, NASA says, Ingenuity will center on exploring an ancient river system on Mars's Jezero crater. Ingenuity has been working together with Perseverance in an area of Jezero known as Seta. NASA says the river system Ingenuity will help explore is very different from the areas it has been flying over since its first flight in April. The past flights have been carried out over mostly flat surfaces. The river system, called a delta, rises more than 40 meters above the crater floor. It contains sharp cliffs, large rocks, and sand-filled areas. Such areas could present transportation difficulties for the Perseverance rover. So the helicopter's main goal will be to help map a safe path for Perseverance to cross over into the Delta, NASA said. In addition, data provided by the helicopter will help the Perseverance team assess possible science targets. The River Delta area is considered a good target for science experiments because it is believed to hold valuable geologic elements. NASA said the area may even contain the proof necessary to determine whether microscopic life once existed on Mars billions of years ago. Perseverance is on a mission to search for signs of ancient microbial life on Mars. Teddy Tenetos is the Ingenuity team lead at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. He said the Jezero River Delta campaign will be the biggest challenge the Ingenuity team faces since the first flight at Mars. In preparation for the helicopter's upcoming activities, Tenetos said he had increased the size of the team and upgraded the aircraft's flight software. The upgrades are designed to permit Ingenuity to fly higher, make longer trips, and improve safety in more difficult conditions. So far, Ingenuity has flown more than 38 minutes and traveled 4.6 kilometers. NASA says the helicopter's 22nd flight is set to happen no earlier than March 19th. It is expected to include a complex move requiring the aircraft to take a sharp turn to avoid a large hill in its path. Ingenuity's chief pilot is Horvo Grip. He noted that the continuing flights are quickly filling up a book he uses to record each trip. He said when the mission started, he thought he would be lucky to record 5 flights. Now, at the rate we're going, I'm going to need a second book, Grip said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. World War II finally ended in August of 1945. Life in the United States began to return to normal. Soldiers began to come home and find jobs. Factories stopped producing war materials and began to produce goods for peacetime. At the same time, other changes began to take place in society. Many Americans were no longer satisfied with their old ways of life. They wanted something new and better, and many were now earning enough money to find that better life. Millions of Americans moved out of cities and small towns. They bought newly built homes in suburban communities outside busy cities. Today, we look at the growth of suburbs and other changes in the American population in the years after World War II.
And we'll have the living room right in here. And the kitchen right here, so we can see the children playing in the yard.
Yeah, the children. Children? Say, how many are you planning on? Not more than 6, I hope. Maybe I better add a few more rooms back here at that.
A married couple in a marketing film for the home building industry. The United States counts its population every 10 years. The first census took place in 1790. At that time, the country had about 4 million people. 100 years later, in 1890, the population was 63 million. By 1950, there were more than 150 million people living in the United States. In the early years of America, the average mother had 8 to 10 children. Living conditions were hard. Many children died at an early age. Families needed a lot of help on the farm, so it was good to have many children. But over the years, birth rates fell. Families began to have fewer and fewer children. By 1900, the average woman had only 3 or 4 children. In 1936, during the Great Depression, the average American mother gave birth to only 2 children. Things changed after World War II. Suddenly, it seemed like every family started having babies. Parents were hopeful about the future. There were lots of jobs. People felt the need for a family and security after the long, difficult years of the war. From 1950 to 1960, the number of children between the ages of 5 and 14 increased by more than 10 million. The increase in births after the war produced what became known as the baby boom generation. An estimated 78 million Americans were born between 1946 and 1964. Many of the new parents moved to homes in the new suburbs built outside the urban environment of cities. Usually, a developer would buy land, maybe from a farmer, then clear it, level it, and build houses on it. Young families would buy the houses with money that they borrowed from local banks. Life was different in the suburbs, calmer, less crowded than life in the big city. There were all sorts of group activities. There were Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, parent-teacher associations at school, outdoor cooking, where families gathered in someone's backyard to eat hamburgers hot off the grill. Historian William Manchester described life in the suburbs in this way. The new suburbs were free, open, and honestly friendly to anyone except black people, whose time had not yet come. Manchester wrote, families moving in found that their new friends were happy to help get them started. Children in the suburbs exchanged toys and clothing almost as though they were group property. When little Bobby outgrew his clothes, his mother gave them to little Billy across the street. People felt safe enough to leave their doors unlocked. Parents did everything they could to make life good for their children. Between 1950 and 1960, the number of boys playing on Little League baseball teams increased from less than 1 million to almost 6 million. The number of Girl Scouts increased by 2 million. Bicycle sales doubled. And it wasn't just two-wheeled transportation that experienced a boost.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America's asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all. On a highway or a road along a levee. Performance is sweeter. Nothing can beat her. Life is completer in a Chevy. So make a date today to see the USA. See it in your Chevrolet.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.